So, you know, to begin with, have you been sitting? Or
I haven't been. I have slackened off. Well, I have been. I have lived in a Zen center for a number of years, and I've been living away from the center, and I haven't had anything to do. And I live in a cabin by a stream, which is ideal for a retreat. And I've been trying to really listen to my body. And in the beginning, because I had automatically gotten up at 4:30, it was habitual. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to see, you know, occasionally I sit, but yeah. I haven't been doing any formal discipline because I resented. It was too easy to do it within a construct.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then the minute that I was alone,
it's too hard to do it without it.
No, it was that I was left with a sense of being out of control in just my senses and my drives and needs. And so I felt, what is the value? You know, because this is externally constructed, and I function within that. But now what happens when you don't have that?
Mm-hmm.
And
now you found out, yeah? I don't know.
I do much, I mean, I'm so happy in a situation like this, you know, being here these last 2 days. But I really feel I have to see what happens when I'm alone. And and I just don't have the composure alone. I feel too full of sexual agitation and a lot of physical energy.
So it's the name of the saying, a good situation is a bad situation, and a bad situation is a good situation.
I think it's a very ripe situation.
Mm. If you have a good situation, I'm just saying, like living by a stream and by a river, and, you know, you have time, you have your own time, and it's a good situation in a way, and yet it can also be a bad situation because you have too much time. And so then the five desires get stronger and stronger and stronger, you know, food, sex, sleep, fame, and wealth. Grow. And it's living in a Zen center is one way, and one thing that Sansin says about that, I was talking about his thing about high class, middle class, low class students with enlightenment. He also talks about, for people's practice, he says, like a high class person with strong practice can like practice anywhere with no props, no teacher, no position, particular position, anything. They just, everything they do with their practice, everything, they're just completely aware of that, so that there's no idea of something not being practiced to them. So they're always strong and clear, and don't need anything, any support systems. And then a middle-class person is able to go off on their own quite often, or are completely on their own always, and do their own retreats. But they have a structure for their practice, chanting, sitting, bowing, whatever, you know, yoga, they don't need other people to talk them into it or to encourage them, they just completely can do it independently. And then he said the low-class students are ones that have to live in a Zen center. Because, you know, you need someone to ring the bell at 4:45 to get you, if we get the 4:45 here, and because, you know, everybody else is getting up and the head Dharma teacher is going to come look for you if you don't get up. You know, you get up, and that helps you to get up. And so, but you get up. You do the same as the other person doing the solo retreat. You get up and practice, and the other person's getting up and practicing on just because they're so clear. And then he goes, but he says, I'll tell you, he said that a low-class student is very high-class because they know what they need to make themselves practice.
Mm.
You know? And that's our main thing, is you have to know what you need to make yourself practice.
Mm.
And whatever it is. You know, but for me, I've been 12 years, you know, and I still need the Zen Center. I think personally I need it, even though I'm one of the older students here and stuff. It helps me a lot to get up in the morning so I know people are getting up with me. And I like to do it. I like chanting with a lot of people. And, you know, it's very supportive. But again, that's me. But you have to find.
I love,
you know,
that. I mean, I love that more than anything else. Just, you know, the dance of it. And, mm-hmm. and I love it, but I resent.
Depending on it?
Yes. And the fact of having to employ something to make me do it instead of being aware of, you know, what is going on. But what is going on is so completely out of control.
Also, with that, that might develop if you had stayed at the Zen Center, or maybe if you had really looked into your reasons for leaving really clearly, or just. Or when you, after you'd left, whatever, but to, I think there's a couple of reasons to live at a Zen Center. It's not just for your own practice, you know. If you also look at it, that you're living there to welcome people that come, to help guide them, teach them, and encourage them to stay and practice, or to visit often, and to support your Sangha, your brothers and sisters that are practicing with you. It's not just for you. It's like, and Satsang will often talk about that. He'll say, you know, your practice is empty if you don't have a vow. You can't make it up in your head, oh, I want to help all people and support their practice and be a clear and strong person and be a good teacher. I mean, you can't just have that a head trip, but if it grows naturally. It comes. Human beings have a couple of things that animals don't have, and one of them is a vow, a compassionate vow that appears naturally, springs forth from practice. You begin to care. It's a wonderful feeling, you know, when you begin to care about people and to not think of yourself. But, and so living in the Zen Center is not just for you, but it's to make the Zen Center strong so people can learn about Zen. I'm really gung-ho Zen Centers because I'm gung-ho Zen practice. Like personally, I just love it. I don't think that's particularly, I do in a way, if I admit it, I think it's one of the better practices that exists, you know, to generalize them all in a clunk, but that Zen is just a very, very high class teaching, and so to me, where else could you be but at a place that teaches that practice, you know? I mean, that's like, if that's like the ultimate in helping people get out of their crap, then isn't it neat to be somewhere where you can propagate that? So that's just my trip with it, but, and it is a trip in a way, I mean, so I always kind of get into this thing, oh God, I would love it. I would just, like, instead of having suburbs, I'd like to have, like, every 50 acres of Zen Center, you know? And everybody in the world lives in a Zen Center, you know? It's bullshit, but, you know, if I could make things up, you know? Like, sometimes I play tennis, and they have this thing that when you pull it, if a tennis ball gets stuck in the fence, you know, you can, when you pull it out, you make a wish. One person I play tennis with says that, so. Just make a wish whenever it gets stuck, and so I always wish that everybody would practice. That's my wish, you know, everybody would practice. I don't care if it's Zen practice, everybody just had that mind of what is this, you know, how can I get clear? Mm. So, you know, that's your vow, and I'll hit you with that, just because I just will. Just maybe your vow isn't strong enough. So then you have all this space to think about yourself, you know, my life, my problems, my boyfriend, you know, my resentment, you know, it's my. And that's not bad. Just like recognize that, and then how do I get rid of this I, my, me? You know, that's where the suffering comes from. Yeah. Then other things get more important. And then, for me, this is how it works. Other things are not more important than my husband, but they're in a different context. You know, and so my husband is my. It's just a relationship karma thing that I have. It's like a crossword puzzle in a way. Different than my vow, in a sense, not different, but it's, so if the other things that are weighing really heavily also in my life of being a good mother, a good nurse, a good Dharma teacher, da-da-da, all these roles, you know, but then wife is one of those. It's one out of five things really in my life that are really important, you know. A good daughter is one of my things, and a good wife, a good mother, a good nurse, a good teacher, you know, and a good friend, a sixth, and you may probably 20, you know. And, they all weigh the same after a while, I think. It's not so out of balance. He doesn't throw you off if your husband's mean to you one night, or, you know, your friend. You know, it's like, you know, it's more rhythm. It's more balance, so that then you can maybe you know, whether it's strong speech to him or maybe he needs a back rub or whatever he needs. A kick in the pants or a back rub is usually one or the other, you know. But, you know, but you're wise. You know which one it is. And it's not for you. It's like, oh, what is this? Again, what is this? What's, you know, that's everything that comes from him in this you, and as a Democrats and Republicans thing, it's all, you know, if it's touching your buttons, it's something, he's your teacher, you know. So, I get that mind a lot too, as well. Kwanzaa, he's Kwanzaa Impulse Hall, you know, he's my teacher, he's my friend, to point all those things out.
I really feel that, and my inclination is to surrender.
But again, it can't be from here, it has to be from here. If it's in your head, then it's just another trip and it won't work. And you'll resent it, you know.
I'd like to...
Go ahead, whatever.
I want to ask a question, but it's really a lot of questions. But it's all about the same thing, about teachers and students. Because I hear you talking about Sinsanim, and he sounds like what I was looking for when I first started practicing. Like somebody who would give me cake. And I really wanted that very much.
Yeah.
The teacher that I found has... I've developed a relationship with him where we know each other very well, but I've also discovered that he's not perfect.
Uh-huh.
And it sounds like sometimes other teachers are perfect.
Yeah.
In the symphony, oh, wow, everybody says it's a gem. I used to think that about my teacher, and partly because of certain things that have happened that I've found out about his personal life, you know, something like all the stuff that's happening all over the country now. And I don't know how to put the question, but it's...
You just say it. It's okay.
I don't know if I can. it's what you and a number of the other teachers have said about that don't look for a teacher.
Yeah.
And yet I have one.
Yeah.
What do I do with him?
Get rid of him.
I guess I'd like to get rid of him, but keep him too. I'd like to use his teacher.
Yeah. So that's again, you know, it's for you to digest that. You know, is to say what. I think maybe you know you feel maybe your dependence on having someone be good and strong and clear to help guide you so you can be that way, you know, and then when you find out a few kinks here and there, it's like disappointment, right, and fear and insecurity, and so then you start to, you know, all those things, insecurity, well, where does that come from, what is this, you know, right, what am I, where, to me, I'll remember when I was a little kid a lot, when I sit, you know, I'm still that same little kid, you know, and those things, I'm still carrying a lot of the things I carried. You know, like I sucked my thumb till I was 13 years old. You know, finally I'm like putting that bad tasting stuff on my thumb and tying it behind my back when I go to bed, like to get myself to stop. I was old enough to figure out all these techniques to stop sucking your thumb. It's like, but that came, you know, what's that come from? You know, and same thing, sucking your thumb, needing a teacher to be good, clear. It's the same, you know, need and. So you have, you're complete. That's what everybody's been saying all the time. You're already complete. So you can just, it's the thing is that we often, people don't have any direction in their practice. They don't have any idea how to deal with these feelings or these needs or these insights. So again, like I'll just reiterate, just putting it into your, making that question real for you. Oh. You kind of name them off. Oh, I feel insecure when... You have to psychoanalyze yourself, but you get just even cop to what's appearing. And then again, it ends up with, what is this? Those are my words. That's what helps me the most. Some people, you know, have a different way of saying it. You know, what? We have a calligraphy, I think, I don't know if we sell it, but it's a real famous one. It says, what is this? A big question mark. You know, then there's no blame anymore. Well, he, you know... Or I shouldn't, or he should have, you know. Mm-hmm. Instead, it goes to what is this, and what happens subtly, or else it might be a huge thing, a big step, or it might be just one little one. But it's like you're a little less dependent when you can do that. Yeah. Again, you're a free person when you're asking this. You're not asking for anything. You're just asking. You know, so that practice will help you. I know with Santanee, my perception of him is that he's been, you know, from a scale to one, from 1 to 10. If I, most of the teachers I've seen, and again, this is totally my perception, most of them are around a 6 or 5 or 4, mm-hmm. and, you know, just compared to Santanee. If he's the 10, they're all there. And then in another way, if it's the Shakyamuni Buddha, mm-hmm. 1 to 10, and just, again, Shakyamuni Buddha is just this idea of someone who's really gotten rid of all of their karma. They don't carry anything around. Which I don't think really, Shakyamuni probably still had some karma, but in Buddhist literature and stuff, there's some saints that Shakyamuni Buddha, but he was on this earth, and this earth is the pits in a way, you know. So he's our Buddha, but there's realms of clearer beings. When I saw Star Wars, I kind of got that idea, you know, there probably are. I went to see that with Santanee, and I hadn't thought about it much, you know, and I was never into science fiction or anything. And we're driving home, I said, Santanee, do you think there really are like other planets with life on them? I figure scientifically there probably are. You look at the galaxy, and obviously there's all these suns and planets, and I'm sure some of them support life. And he just went, of course. And he said, many universes also, not just, you know, like, whoa, you know, just really broad. So, you know, so, but just using the 10 to be Shakyamuni Buddha, who's, you know, for our idea, he really had no karma, you know, and got really clean. And then I'd give Santanee, you know, I would have, when I first met, I'd give him a 10, right? He's right up there with him. And so I didn't know the difference, you know. And but if you know a person for 12 years, you said, well, he's always in a rush, isn't he? Santanee's always in a rush. And if you call him on it, you know. Like if you're thinking mindless, well, if you're really clear, then you wouldn't always be in a rush. But if you say to him, you know, why are you always in a rush? He'll go, it's my karma. But he's not holding it. It's like he goes, that's the way that's my karma. He's not admits, it's not like an admission for him. He goes, it's just, he doesn't really need to get rid of it because that's how he has that karma, but he uses it really effectively. He's always going to another Zen center. He's not going, he's not rushing to, you know, go to a brothel or something. He's rushing to go to another Zen center. So he uses his speedy karma to go to good places. But still, you know, but there's still shades of, I wish he would slow down and say goodbye or something.
What if you were using him to go to a brothel? What would you do?
I find out why, you know, for whom.
Yeah.
Who's he going to the brothel for? Is it just this, you know, off-the-wall sexual need that he has, and or is he really going there to help the ladies there, you know?
Yeah,
and if it's an off-the-wall sexual need, I wouldn't necessarily reject him as my teacher. I think that the thing that would stop me from having to be my teacher is if he was a real phony about it and denying it, and maybe one thing like that I could accept, but if he was doing that in a few areas, and I have no idea, this is just totally hypothetical, but I would really, I think the bottom line is get some straightness out of it, some, you know, real, don't be false, you know. If you're doing that, then that's cool, but then in your Dharma talks, you should admit that you're really horny, and so sometimes you go out, and, you know, no excuses, but that's, you know, you don't say, I'm sorry, but sometimes I need to do this, that's what I do, and, you know, it's neat. And sometimes he couldn't say that. Maybe that's not appropriate to tell your whole sangha, but your close students, or if someone is bothering them, then you can just face-to-face talk about it with them. And say, you know. Yeah. And sometimes it's okay to hide things because you know it's going to, if it's for your students, then it's okay, and it's something you're working out. And like, I don't go and tell everybody, oh, I just, you know, had this terrible fight, or with my mother. I mean, well, it's not, who wants to hear it? You know, it's something you need to straighten out. It's not good enough, bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But I think you have to find some bottom line of honesty, I think, or communication with your teacher. And if you're not finding that, then that's a hard one. Then maybe it's not your teacher. Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of the things that have come up
Mm-hmm. Relationship, practice, teaching. And it's a real question in my life because I feel guilty when I'm working on my relationship and not at the end of greeting people. You know, when I'm out having dinner with my guy instead of... I don't know, it's just mm-hmm. I don't know the whole question of marrying like, mm-hmm. all of that. I decided mm-hmm. not to have children, which was a good decision. I mourned not having a my child and the whole period of sitting and writing with that. I guess one of my the good mother I don't know, one of something the mom taught me to do was be a mom.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the transmission that I was karmically keep going, which I think I will, and no, in a different way.
Yeah.
But I'm not confident that my weighing of this is a really tough relationship you're having, and rather than really view what it's teaching me, I'm going to say, well, I'm a monk. Mm-hmm. Drawback in the sort of relationship or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think there's a strength to that focus, you know, to that spending some time just with the training.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got that option now, and I recognize that that's an unusual gift to have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm doing it, but I spend an inordinate amount of time I feel going, I wonder if I should make this less ambivalent, you know, I should just make a commitment, or is my commitment this kind of ambivalent way of doing it, or why am I trying to define it, and I don't know. I just,
You don't know.
I don't know.
Don't know. See, that's what we think, don't know. Sometimes that's one instruction. It's different ways of getting people to get in touch with that question. Basically, you don't know, so you sit with that. You know, not what the issues even, just not knowing. And from that comes the clarity. One of the teachers said today, you know, it's like there's no particular, you're perfect, you know. You can do anything you want, you're free and perfect, and one way isn't any better than the other, and, you know, and yet one way is better than the other, maybe for you, and yet if you're not in touch with that, then you have to find out what is that way. So, and again, if there's no vow, and again, this can't be, you can't superimpose a vow in your consciousness, but if there is no vow for other people, then often you get really lost in your way because this is these personal choices, you know. But if you really have for what and for whom, how can I save all sentient beings? Or how can I help people? You know, what's... And again, it can't be some fake moralistic thing you got from a book, some dogmatic, you know, but it has to come from you. And so just don't know, just questioning, sincerely questioning, the vow appears, you know, somehow. And when the vow appears, then it's choiceless. It doesn't really matter to you anymore. You know, it's not, and for me, which one would be the best for me?
Yeah. It's like, I know I have moments where there's no problem.
Yeah, you're right.
But it's one of these things that the frequency with which it seems a problem.
Yeah.
That's
when you're checking and thinking, you know.
Yeah.
And so whenever that mind appears, whether it appears 20 hours a day or just, you know, it doesn't matter. Don't worry how often it appears. Just go back to what you're doing just now. If you want advice, disconnect. What am I doing just now? What is this? And it's amazing how we're thinking about all these ideas, and we're not there, you know. We're not there. We're not doing our work. We're not tasting we're eating, we're not tasting the food, you know, we're missing it all over the place. And the whole thing that we want to teach is to see that just this is Buddha nature. Just, you know, just this moment. And yet we're on this... So yes, you know, it's all thinking. So connect with the moment. It's hard. It's like pulling yourself. You're seeing this great movie of your life, you know. It's like my daughter. I take her to the movies, and she's really actually very good for her age, but sometimes she has to go to the bathroom right at the best part of the movie. But the reality is, you know, that's just a movie, and my kid needs to go to the bathroom, you know, and I go, no, wait a minute. It's like, what are you doing just now? I was like, that's it, you know. It's hard to stop watching the movie. It's just your personal drama, right?
So
yeah. Like, pull yourself, you know, that's just technique, again, a Zen technique of return to the moment, and then your teacher will appear, or your path will appear your way. Mm. So neat, because I used, more and more, you know, I used to think, like, well, Joju is very inspiring, because you read about him, and, you know, he didn't get enlightenment until he was 80 or something. He started practicing when he was 40. Got enlightenment when he was 80, and then he didn't start to teach until he was, I don't know, 100.
20 years.
Another 20 years, lived to be 120, I think. So he would be a little off. But anyway, he's like, you know, time. You know, it's like, so for him, it's like, you realize that this doesn't have to be, you don't have to have all your shit together by the time you're 30, and you can't make that an excuse either. Well, maybe I'm like Joju. And, you know, he was probably. And then there's other people that, you know, you hear a story about the guy that just, his whole life, all he did was hit cows' heads with a hammer, because he was born in an Indian caste system where that was his father had done that job and he had to do it, you know, just, and he had a lot of compassion and a lot of questions, and he didn't even, you know, he didn't like to eat meat or didn't want to kill the cows, but that was his job, so he just did it, and then one day, as he's smashing a cow's skull, he gets enlightenment, awakening, because all of his life he just had this question, you know, what is this? How did I, you know, what am I? How did I just get this job? And what's the purpose of my life? And killing the cow. He got enlightenment from doing that low class, horrible work, you know. And so it's no, you know, if you have no idea about yourself and your role, but just ask, what am I? Then your role will just flow out of you. Some people have a lot harder time than others, but that's their mistake. That's their karma. It comes from holding and wanting and being very impressed with certain people's roles, or really having picking and choosing a lot, and liking one thing more than another. Then, of course, you have trouble with deciding what to do with your life, because you have all these choices. But the people that don't care, don't hold as much, they have a much easier time flowing in. Just any job's okay. I'll just do it. Yeah, and it's, again, for whom, for what, is it a helpful job, is it, you know, you can certainly make choices along the way. I know how you feel, believe me. But I'm always torn about it. That's just what Chosen was saying. She's, I could really relate to what she's saying, but I'm a mother, always, if I'm in the dorm room, I think I should be home. I'm home, I think I should be in the dorm room. I'm always doing that. I mean, I do it every night when I can hear the bell ring from my house. At 7 o'clock, it rings the bell. Every night when I hear the bell ring, my heart just sinks. I go, oh God, I should be over there, you know. And if I'm over there, then I'm, you know, it's just like this whole drama, and I haven't gotten to the bottom of it yet, you know. My own, you know, just like, yeah, it's like someday I'll be at peace with hearing that bell and really know that I'm not
confident.
Yeah, I'm doing what I need to be doing. And, or else I'll be in the dorm room and know my daughter's fine. That feels... I really think that's what I should do. Anybody else want to? You haven't said anything.
What you were just saying about work is very interesting to me, because I have to choose a new career now. I've just... moved to my new place, and now I have to find a new job, and I was wondering if you could say anything about how one can use meditation to provide some kind of a feeling, and I guess that's one of the reasons I came here. I sort of hope that I could get some kind of feeling about where to start from. I was a publisher for 12 years in New York, and I left a year ago and just studied science for a year. Now I'm not sure what I want to do with that. I've just moved to Boston from New York, so I'm kind of reorganizing my life. And I just started sitting about 3 weeks ago. So
We really need somebody in our office, don't we? We really need somebody to work here. Do I have a job for you? Yeah.
That's kind of part of the problem that I'm attempting. And every place I go, it seems like somebody says, oh, you want a job? Here's a job.
Uh-huh.
Here's, you can do this, yeah. You can do this, you can do this. And I have no idea what I want to do, and I'm very suspicious of that.
Mm-hmm.
Any clue.
I could do anything. I don't know
anywhere to start from. I think that's kind of probably not the wrong. That's not a good one to look at.
Hmm.
So, that's my next project.
You look for, it's hard, you know, to, mm-hmm. It's a real hard space to be in. Yeah. Maybe if you look at it as who needs me the most, maybe. I didn't mind. I liked them, and so I don't know why, but I just wanted. So I went the very next day after I heard the name of this place. I went and I applied, and they hired me. They really needed nurses, and they hired me right away. And I was in there like within 48 hours after I heard the name. I didn't even like when I had my interview to work there. I didn't even look around at what it looked like, or I was just like I was totally directed from something else, you know, to do it. I didn't even. It didn't make any sense, and so I took the job and. And the next day I went to work, and the place was filthy and smelly, and I couldn't believe I'd gotten myself into it. It's like not what I expected. I didn't expect anything. It was like, these people were drooling, and they had strokes, and they were, you know, anybody's been in a nursing home, you know, some of them. Were. And that was really hard for me because I was in charge of this floor. I just was out of nursing school, so I'd never really been in charge of anything before. And all the aides and the orderlies were really defiant and lazy. And so I was trying to like delegate authority, and you know, and I wasn't very good at it. I was too soft and not sure enough of myself. But so it was just this. It was incredible strain and stress and hard for me. I hated to see the patients lying there wet and. Nobody changing them, so I would go and I'd always get the work done, but it was just this effort. I would be running around checking up on their work, and I just, it was so hard, and I did it like full time for a long time, and then I got married and had a baby, and I started working part time. That place always let me, they always, like I wanted to do the 100-day retreat, they let me do it, and they they kept me on the whole benefits. I mean, I had to pay my insurance, but they kept me. I didn't lose any seniority or. Sometimes they'll just take everything away and you have to get rehired. And everything has been like that. Now they're letting me work one weekend a month, which is unheard of for a nurse. You always have to work every other weekend, unless you're just director or supervisor or something. And they made me work one weekend a month. It's always gone that way. If ever I need anything for the Dharma, you know, for like my practice, they let me do it. And when I had my baby, they let me stay. They gave me a 3-month leave of absence, which is normal. And I just couldn't leave her after 3 days. I couldn't, you know, leave her. So I went in with the baby in my arms. I said, please, you know, I can't go back to work yet, you know. And I tried it for a couple of nights, and it was terrible. So they said, well, it's just like, he just says, well, he had administrator had a little baby girl, too. So he said, I know how you feel. I said, I'll give you another 3 months. And I said, well, then I guess I should start paying for my insurance. And he goes, no, I'll pay your insurance, too. So they paid my full insurance for 3 more months. This, again, is unheard of.
Has it changed as a place to work? Has it changed the treatment of the patients gotten better?
Yeah, they built a brand new building. It's huge and modern and pretty with all these windows, and it's, you know, it smells fine. There's no rugs or anything, so it's pretty clean. And they have like 3 times as many patients, so they have a lot more nurses now. It's always been staffed really well. They always have enough aides and orderlies, and if they can, they try to get them to come in. So it's been this ideal job, but you know, as far as for me, it's been. And again, this, as I was saying in my talk just now, the challenges of having your karma appear always are there. You know, it's always there. It's either from the
You know, the people you work with, or the people that are sick, or the relatives, those three things. And the administration, four things. You know, they can give you a hard time, or the patients, or the relatives, or the people you work with. So it's always a challenge, you know. It doesn't have to be like these, all these IVs and tubes to make it exciting, you know. I used to like all the machines and gadgets when I was in school. I like technical things, but, you know. So it's like Zen in a way. You know, the nursing home is like kind of boring compared to some practices. You know, there's not a lot of rewards in it, but it's underneath it. It's always there.
What's the name of the place that got you?
The Jewish Home for the Aged. The Jewish thing really got me. I help Jewish people. Yeah.
Oh.
Are you from Providence?
No, I have a friend who works for the Jewish Home for the Aged in New Haven.
Oh. Yeah, it's a chain, though. I mean, I think they all know each other, some corporation.
I was curious, did that woman really need that pill?
No.
Did it make any difference?
No. And that would have been, you know, the best thing for me to just throw it in the trash and say, it was a Darvon, it was a pain pill. So in a way, you can't really tell whether she's in pain. So I don't think she is, but that could have been, like, probably my wisest move, just to trash it when I saw she was having a hard time swallowing. But, I usually have this thing where I need to say I gave, you know, if I'm going to give it, I should give it, you know. But, you know, she probably didn't even need it. She doesn't look like she's in pain. She just looks like she's hurt. There's so much brain damage that I don't think she's feeling anything right now. Well, this is nice. It's kind of this intimate little group. I didn't really have any ideas for this workshop, except that I thought I could answer questions. People had questions.
Is there such a thing as progress in practice?
What do you think?
Yes and no.
Well, for you, have you been practicing at all?
In about 2 or 3 years. And sometimes I think I have more concentration. I can be more there, be more of myself in that. And then other times something happens, like your episode that you told about in the nursing home, where I just do something. I said, oh, God, I'm worse than I ever was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe I'm just fooling myself when I think the other thing.
Mm-hmm. So you're thinking the other thing is the first mistake. Getting something, I'm getting somewhere. It's already then you're not anywhere. When you think I'm getting somewhere, you're not anywhere. That's just a thought, right? It's just an idea. And relearning that is what practicing is, I think, just to always see that you're already here. You're already there. And that when people talk about someone attained enlightenment, you know, that's what they attained. They attained that there's no attainment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we chant that twice a day, no attainment with nothing to attain, in the Heart Sutra. And again, it's just how the same with Sansanimi, he just hands it to people. I just handed it to you, you know, you already.
Yeah.
And so if you've been asking that, you know, if you've been really looking at things, then just that one word will, you know, sometimes you read about a bamboo, a stone hit the bamboo, or see a plum blossom, or whatever, it's like, there's something, well, oh, of course, you know, that's enlightenment. Oh, God, no. But I think often you don't get that insight. You know, Japanese they call it kensho or whatever. You don't get that understanding unless you've been asking. Not making the idea of progress. Even when that idea appears, you go, oh, what is progress? And, you know, instead of you needing to ask me, which is fine for now, it's very appropriate for right now, but in your everyday life, you know, when that idea appears, am I making any progress with my practice? I think anybody that practices says that appear often, you know. I have that appear, you know. And then you just, again, I think that the most important thing to do with that is to say, what is progress? You know, what do I want? What is this? And really just completely, you know, get to it that way. And moment to moment, pay attention to what you're doing. It's then screaming out at you all the time. Mm. Progress. Progress is, there's no such thing as progress. And that's a human conception, progress.
Mm-hmm.
completely made up by the human mind.
Yeah. And the idea of separate, I mean, when you say, what do you really want? I think, I want to know, I want to understand, I want to not be separate from
so
the,
then
the
what
wind
do
the
I want to understand? What is that? What is no separation? You know, then again, mm-hmm. you're your own teacher. Mm-hmm. Again, so you say, just boil it down to that final thing that you want. What mm-hmm. do I want? I want no separation. What is no separation? Then that's your question.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's some, you know, there's patent questions like, what is this? What am I? Does a dog have Buddha nature? Joe just said, moo, what did that mean? There's certain questions that we can right. use. Also, what we can do is to take our own real true question and just from that, mm-hmm. it can change.
Mm-hmm.
Change hourly, or it can change, you know, if it's a real, it's really gripped you, then you can keep it, you know. Not keep it, but it's there, you know, mm-hmm. so you're just in touch with those questions and you, and that's what can help cut off your thinking about progress. Rather, you just try to find
mm-hmm.
Find it.
Yeah.
What is that mind that thinks there's progress? Where does that come from? Anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, centering.
Yeah.
That's what our practice is here, is to find, really get to the bottom of what your question is. And then use it. It's a tool. Some types of meditation have just attention, just sitting with just attention. It's really quiet. And you can hear little footsteps upstairs, so awareness of that. You can hear the footsteps and the greenness of the rug. Just letting things be. So that's one meditation technique, just to settle in, just quiet, just stillness. The laughter appears, you don't hold it, you don't reject it, you just, again, let that just be there, and the technique I was just talking about is, to me, more portable. I mean, you can keep that still mind sometimes when you're sitting, you can, you know, it comes and goes, but you can, it's wonderful sitting, just to be quiet, you hear the baby crying, but if you go out, you know, when you go upstairs, you go home, you're riding home from a retreat, or you're, you know, facing whatever you need to face, it's, you know, effort, for you need your job, or your home, your family, it's like, where is that still mind? It's not there, you know, it's not possible to keep that mind. Not so possible. But the question mind, is, to me, is more portable.
Mm-hmm.
So if you, something appears, you know, I have to use my examples, because that's, again, like a child that's not happy, and you're trying to, instead of it being like, what can I do, it's kind of like, it's just something to solve, to help out, maybe you can make the baby happier, or a child happier, but also it's like, what is this? It can be that same what is this you had when you were sitting, you know, and it's portable, so it goes from just a great question that, you know, what's the purpose of my life, or what is progress, what is it not to be separate, what is this? It just boils down to what. And so when the child is unhappy, you go, what? Same what. And then you can, your mind already understands, already we're complete. And that's saying a Buddhist teaching, that we're already complete, there's nothing lacking, So if you're open and really asking what, it doesn't matter whether you're a truck driver or a nuclear physicist, or whatever your job is, neither one has more clear consciousness than the other. It's same as Buddha's mind. You know, we always teach, you know, do you hear this? Do you see this? If Buddha was sitting here and I flashed my hand, you would see the same hand as Buddha sees. No different. His eyes, your eyes are the same, you know, and then he would hear that, you would hear that. No, there's nothing lacking. You know, just paying attention. So that what is, to me, is something that's more portable and more, it's easier to once it, you practice that way for a while, it becomes, Sanat Nimo says, you don't know mind, it's bigger, bigger, bigger. I used to always hear him say that, and I never felt like mine was getting that much bigger. It's very subtle, but I found the past few years, it's more, you know, it's it's less assuming and more just questioning, but not in an opposite way, questioning for the answer, but just not assuming anything. And that's what we mean by don't know mind, the mind that doesn't know. It's not, it's walking into everything with not knowing, without assuming or preconceiving. It's just so that even though you go home every day and your roommate or your wife or your husband is expecting a certain behavior or a certain thing to be going on, you know, you, if you just go in the room with not knowing, then you can pick up maybe your wife or your husband, your child or whoever, your roommate is, you might just sense a little sadness, a little something, you know. And if, you know, if you sense that, you go, something happened today, you know, something happened. That's what mind, you know. Something. And that makes them feel so much, well, yeah, you know. And then you're just reflecting, just listening. Oh, well, tell me, what do you want to share it? Do you want to talk about it? And they can just see that you're just completely receptive, you know, just what? And that what mind goes into frying the eggs, and you know, so it's great. I like it. It's like I get more enthusiastic every year. You know? Once I finally got that, even when I was really, like I was saying in my talk, when I was really my worst, my anger and my impatience is my worst karma, I think. And even when I'm like doing that, that's also it. You know, the more I got that, I was felt like, well, wow. The worst thing is when you're, as you, you know, thinking you need to make more progress and you're not there yet. And that's the worst feeling in the world, I think, is feeling incomplete. So again, you're seeing everything else as being incomplete too. Like Ronald Reagan, you know, all the storehouses of nuclear weapons, like that's like horrible in a way. And yet, if your mind is complete, then that also is complete. It's horrible, and it's what we've done to ourselves. And yet, it's also complete teaching, and it's also very just and fair and. As natural as the pine tree out the window. It's this balanced thing that we've done, imbalanced, but it's our imbalance is our life. So if you can get comfortable with those things sitting in all the storehouses, and not I don't mean in a placid way, but in an apathetic way, but just completely letting them be what they are, then. Again, then there's not this discontented feeling of, well, what could I be doing to get rid of those things, you know? In an agitated way, you can have that question, like, what can I do? But
is that based on the doubt that was kind of intervening?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Is that hurtful?
But because he intervened, he got all that teaching, you know, so... Yeah, you can. Please don't. You know. Yeah. If you could say, you know, the right person, the right time, could go up to Gromyko or Reagan. And say, please don't. Go make friends. It's not that easy. That's my, you know, when I was in seventh grade, I used to think that way. I came home to my dad one day. I got all excited. I said, Dad, I know what we can do. And he goes, what? I said, we just have to get all these nations, have one representative from each nation, we'll get together and we'll just talk and we'll all work out everybody else. I said, nobody's talking. You know, we gotta get. He goes, Bobby, did you ever hear of the United Nations? And I said, no, I didn't know anything about the United Nations. He goes, well, there's this thing called the United Nations in New York where that's what they do. You know, they spend billions of dollars every year trying to communicate stuff, but nobody's listening to each other. Why don't they listen? And he, you know, it was the first time I really got that blow of that it's not going to be that easy, you know. I really thought. But, you know, that's if everybody had that seventh grade mind, if, please don't, you know, let's listen to each other. Then we'd all listen. One of the teachers today said that, you know, like, I guess it was Chosen said, if the Democrats and Republicans knew that the Democrat was a Republican, the problem was a Democrat, then they'd listen to each other. Anything else you'd like to share? You don't have to be a question, it also could be just a sharing.
I would like you to, I mean, I really felt that you struck home, but I still would like you to elaborate more when you talked about when someone uses bad speech or good speech. I'm living with someone who I feel it has sort of told me white is black and black is white, whereas before he said white is white. I find myself, you know, my guts just heaving a lot of the time. And it's not what he does. If I just strictly observed and our relationship, you know, there's a lot of harmony. And then he'll sort of deny my experience, what I'm experiencing or perceiving. For example, he doesn't believe in saying, I love you. All of a sudden he told me he doesn't believe in being in love. He'll tell me he's only attracted to what is not attracted to him. He only is attracted to something, someone who is evasive. And I feel like I'm... Of course, when I was that way, when I held him at a distance, he cried, you know, and said he had to have this relationship. So once I said, you're on, he's taken everything back. And I mean, I know that once you say, I love you, that's no longer the way it is. You know, once you say the words, and perhaps I shouldn't need to hear that, but I do. I love it, but I'm not going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these, he'll say, well, you know, how can you allow me, you know, what I do or say to affect you, your state of mind? He's always calling me on my practice. And theoretically, he's always right. But my guts are just heaving, and you know, he'll tell me he's attracted to other women. He's too lazy to do anything about it, but you know, he is telling me a lot of these things that the words even defy his actions, because he seems like he does to me. So I've been trying to respond, to sit and talk, and I feel like it's opening, it just is a can of worms if ever I try and do that. So the only thing that seems to me, my only recourse is to take a vow of silence as far as he is concerned, and just let the words, you know, run over me, whether they're good or bad. But it's, you know, I don't know what to do with my guts in the meantime. And my expression really falters.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't pin him. He says, oh, my middle name is ambivalence. And he doesn't believe in commitment. And I know that commitment, when you make a commitment, it can be a limitation. So I kind of agree with him philosophically, and yet my insides tell me something altogether different. So how to handle, you know, a lifestyle of that going on?
Well, I went to science and he once complained about my husband. A lot of the same issues, you know, kind of wasn't exactly what I expected. You know, I wanted a certain type of husband. Didn't completely fill the bill, and so I expected Sanson to give me some sympathy and agree with me about my husband's personality or something. Oh yeah, you know, he does act that way. first thing he said, it's your problem. And I said, no sympathy, just, it's your problem. And I said, he said, you want something. He said, if you have this I want mind, everything will be suffering. He said, you know, he said, you want, you have this mind, I want a husband. He said, he's not your husband. He said, he's your Dharma brother. He said, if you think of him as your Dharma brother, then you don't expect this husband, this idea I had of this good husband. It's gone. It's just my brother. You have more room for a brother. You know, a brother is like, you know, symbolizes some of you really care for and help when they're in need, and you're related and all that. And so his Dharma brother is even a stronger connection. This Dharma brother, you practice together. You know. So He said, "You killed this. I want a good husband mind, okay?" This great teaching. I'd known Sansanin for years, and I knew that he knew me really well, so I just really heard it. I mean, some people would hear him saying it to me and just be appalled, like how insensitive and why he's really chauvinistic or da-da-da-da. You know, I could, you know, hear some people would take that completely wrong, but for me, on the level I was at with my practice, I mean, I knew, I just heard him. So you have to let go of everything. And that's a big one, you know, the person you spend your time with, your mate, you know, for both men and women, they want a certain mate. And a lot of it's just really egocentric, you know, make me feel good, you know. You don't feel good. You should compliment me on my practice, not be picking at it, you know, right? You want him to think you have a good practice. And you want him to adore you, and, you know, all the, I'm speaking for myself, you know, it's like you want these things. And they want it from you, too, you know. It goes both ways. That helps me a lot. I still pick up, that ball about, you know, we have there's this saying about, you know, sometimes we have it's like if you're bouncing a ball, and that's your karma. It's like if you are really attached to ice cream, and you, every other night or something, you go out and get a hot fudge sundae, and so you just keep that ball bouncing the same. And sometimes you binge, and you have like 3 hot fudge sundaes in one day, and then you're really bouncing hard. It's like your ice cream karma, you know, you just keep bouncing. And then you decide, you know, you really think, I'm really attached to ice cream, and I'll start by just having it once a week, so you bounce in a little bit lower, you know. And then you say, once a month, and then you're just hardly, you know, just, it's almost, you know, that you just bounce it once in a while, and then it's kind of almost stops, and you bounce it again. And then finally you say, you know, I'm just going to stop eating ice cream. You really have gotten so, you're not so attached. And so the ball's just, you know, it's almost ready to stop, you know. That would mean your ice cream karma is finished at the start. Just when it's about to stop, you...
We do that all the time. You know, it's like the same thing with relationships. You know, sometimes I get this incredibly altruistic love, and I don't want anything from him. I just really want to support his practice. Not just his, but everybody's practice, and all, mine and his, and everybody together. And I have a clear mind. I don't want anything from him. And you know that when you don't want anything from someone, they give you everything. You know, if you really let go, I don't want anything, then anything you get is more than you ever expected. You just don't even have that conception of expecting. It's amazing. But that's like jumping off a cliff. And we have a few koans that are like that we use, like just really like letting go. And
am I doing it right now? I mean, it sounds so clear. I know it's true.
Uh-huh.
You know, I comprehend it, and it's right. Am I getting it now?
What I just said, you mean?
Yes.
Probably you're getting it right now, but you'll forget. That's what happens to me. I'm saying it, and I'll forget. I'm the one that's saying it, and I'll forget.
How can understanding?
It can't help you. It's only like it's interesting. We always say that understanding can't help you. So you can come and hear good speech. You know, we every week here we have a Dharma talk, and even during the week we share giving little short talks at night and just encourage each other. I hear these beautiful talks. You know, even this little snatches, a little 3-minute talk by someone, maybe they just moved in. You know, and they'll just give you this little gem of something. You know, and go, yeah, I know that. And right then you know it. But it's not yours, you know. Partly it's yours.
When does it become mine?
You put that there, you know. When does it become mine? You know, just then when you're saying that, when you're asking that question, you're not holding anything. That's what practice is with a question. You just use that question. There's nothing special about it. It's not like the magic question, when am I not, you know, holding? It's like if you take that and use it, then when you're sincerely asking that, then you're not holding on to anything, you know. And if you do that for even 10 minutes before it's time for, you know, for him to come home or for you to come home, because it's, you know, it's like a trap. Once you're in it, it's hard to. So you have to like just start with just preparing yourself with letting go, and then, so when you do meet, that you've had that mind for a while, and maybe it'll last for a half hour, maybe it'll last for 3 days, You know, we really aren't expecting anything from him. And that'll blow his mind, you know.
But
it's all around
his game.
Isn't
there another side of that, too? I mean, where I find that sometimes I feel like I have to do the exact opposite of that. I have to be willing to acknowledge that I'm really selfish and that I just need you to do this, or my tendency is to always say, oh, you know, it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand
yeah.
that, you know, you're going through something and this and that. But I guess I found for myself that that's a trip I do on myself.
Yeah.
More often than the other side.
Yeah.
Which is asking for too much.
Well, see, if you practice, I'll say for a long time, but it just depends, you know. If your practice is strong and you just have a certain, I hate to use words like this, a grip on it, but because there's nothing to grip onto, but you've
made some progress.
Yeah. touche. It's like a. This is my perception of it right now. It's
mm-hmm.
like what you're asking is like, I think it's really a big one for a lot of people. It's a big one for me too. It's like a. It's not different to not want anything, also to recognize your needs. You know, to say, you know, I really need you to give me a back rub right now. I really need you to be more supportive. You know, not in a judgmental way, but I need this. I would like it to feel more support from you. You know, not like you're not being supportive, but I feel like I need more support. You know, and could you give it to me? Not even from you, but could you give it to me? You know? But, you know, anyway, if you're coming, it's just like the whole thing is at some point you can really start to reflect in a helpful way with people. And sometimes it means like shouting, you know,
mm-hmm.
and saying, you're an asshole. You're a selfish asshole. And walk out. You know, that could be the best thing you could
but
do at some point.
No,
who
I
knows?
Don't
good. Yes, so. You don't understand.
If I've decided that I do not need him
uh-huh.
or his acknowledgement or confirmation or recognition of our relationship or affirmation
uh-huh.
of life in general,
uh-huh.
you know, then I will, then I will never ask him.
But you can't decide that from your head. You have to attain
that. I know,
that.
I have to.
You have to attain it.
Pardon?
You have to attain that, not decide it from your head. Like, you can't just go home with a new idea today.